settling for a brighter gray tint.
That wasn't the first time we met,
he finally said.
When I was 15 years old, and you and Lady Michaela had come to Neve to perform the Heart's Rune ceremony for my uncle.
I stared at him. There was a boy in a hooded cloak and a silver heart's glass. He frowned.
I wore the cloak, yes. But my heart's glass had not yet turned silver then. I was with Counselor Abadiah when he requested for the king to begin the Heart's Rune ceremony.
The boy in the brown cloak accompanying the nervous counselor. The one with the beat red heart's glass. Heavy with anger. He nodded.
You remember now. 10 years ago, a Deva rampaged through Hulsrath, where my family lived. The dark Asha tasked to face it lost her nerve and fled. Other Asha managed to put it down, but not before the town suffered many casualties. My mother and Kaelin's among them.
He paused, then added stiffly,
I don't like my father, but I share his anger at Dark Asha. I question how King Telamain could welcome them with open arms when they caused his wife's death. Though I would never turn against him like my father had. But I was angry, and you were the easiest person to lash out at. I owe you an apology for what I said then. But I stand by what I say now. You must stay away from Kaunts.
Any minute now, Tia, Polaire said grimly, her head tilted back to watch the sky. She nibbled at a thumb.
I don't want to have to do this in near darkness.
We can talk later,
Kaelin said grimly,
looking back out at the waters. If either of us gets through this in one piece.
For someone who believes I'm powerful enough to have to protect a prince against, you don't seem to believe I can do it. He glanced back at me and finally allowed himself a small, brief smile.
Good luck, Lady Tia.
Thanks. I moved toward the edge of the lake, coordinating my breathing with every step that I took. Left foot, right foot, in. And out. Left foot, right foot. In and out. Fox moved beside me, but Polaire put a hand on his arm, forcing him to stay still while I forged on ahead. In and out. Left foot, right foot. My shoes sank into the wet soil. Small bundles of vegetation caressing my feet as I moved, waving against the current. I cast my mind around for the presence, embracing it this time instead of shunting it into the furthest corners of my head, and I thought I felt it respond, sensing the change. I waded farther out, ignoring Polaire's alarmed calls for me to stop, and reached out with my thoughts, feeling the spindles of thought gathering around me. Giving me all the momentum I need. I closed my eyes. I had expected the creature to avoid me like it had in the past, but this time the creature's slow advance into my own head was curious, not angry or threatened. It crept out to where I was waiting, almost childish in its naivety.
That should have been my first clue that something was wrong.
It was far too complacent when it had done its best to avoid me previously. Instead, I closed my eyes and drew in the dark, feeling the energy wrap possessively around me, waiting for me to give the order to strike. And when I did, it burrowed into the dark waters, into the monster's underwater lair, wrapping the weaves of my magic around the creature's will.
Rise, I commanded,
and I felt the world rise with me, and the most horrible pain I'd ever felt in my life exploded through my body as a new presence reared up from behind Thiazi and attacked my thoughts. It was more painful than the torrent of magic Lady Michaela had unleashed at my first Deva raising,
and I dropped to my knees. My tongue tasted something metallic. Blood dripped out of my nose, and the roaring in my ears intensified.
Tia!
I heard Fox shout from somewhere behind me. Heard the splashing of water. I couldn't breathe. Stunned, I fought for control. But a new and sudden presence in my mind was quick to overwhelm me, until nothing but blissful darkness remained.
It took her a few hours to pull herself together, but she appeared well again at its end. It took more strength than I expected it to, she assured me. I have taken back control. I am fine. The last deva should be easy enough. I did not share in her confidence. It occurred to me that should controlling all seven deva be too much for her, the beasts could have turned on us, despite their current docility. I broke out into sweat at the thought. She dismissed my fears. This last one is different. I have shared in its thoughts, have been in its head longer than I have done with the others. It knows me as well as it knows anyone. The Ozzy, I said. She rose to her feet and removed the cork from the last vial she had. The liquid sloshed inside. The Ozzy, she agreed, and, raising the bottle to her lips, drained it completely. The girl closed her eyes. Underneath us, the ground shuddered. She screamed. She was on the ground, writhing again. Her fingers dug into the sand, blood flowing from her lips where she had bitten them. I rushed to her, but she had the presence of mind to raise a hand in warning.
Keep away from me, she rasped.
The pin on my shirt glittered wildly in response. I cannot leave you like this, I persisted, tearing off a wad of my shirt and pushing the rolled-up cloth between her lips. Before I could do more, I was lifted by some unseen hand and sent sprawling. The girl clutched at her head, and her deva shared her pain. They howled and stamped their feet. For a moment, I feared that she had lost control of them.
I will not!
A surge of energy sent me stumbling back. For a moment, the girl was shrouded in a mist of darkness that obscured all in its way. Shadows weaved in and out of the fog, grappling with other unseen things. The deva roared. Just as suddenly, the mist was whisked away, sucked in by some vortex at its center, where the girl had knelt. I saw her heart's glass, dead as the night and black as the void, greedily taking in all the vapors, making them disappear into its depths. An eternity must have passed before she stepped out from the black mist. She was smiling, all traces of pain gone from her face. Behind her, something grotesque and terrifying loomed. A black shape, from which three long necks rose.
29. I was looking down at the body from somewhere up above. It was not moving. It stared back at me with its eyes wide open, mouth slightly agape. There was surprise still stamped across its features, which looked strangely familiar. I saw a human male on his knees by the body's side, movements frantic. I didn't know if the body was alive or if it was dead. Only that it didn't matter. Hate spilled into the air around me, and I reveled in the rage. Wings beat against the wind on either side of me, and I realized they were mine. These were my talons raking through the waters. These were my fangs, snapping at the spray. I had a pair of wings and two pairs of forearms that ended in claws, a long tail whipping out behind me, and three heads. There was something wrong with this, but I couldn't understand why. I was also screaming, the sound louder than anything I had ever heard.
I was screaming at the humans below me, the bad things who had come to harm me. I would not let them harm me. I would kill them. One of them threw fire, but I barely felt it. I lashed out with my tail, and they scattered. I tried again and caught one in the leg. It fell, and I moved for the final kill. But another surrounded me with invisible wings that cut and stabbed at my skin, and I turned to confront it. The pain was like small pinpricks in my mind, easily brushed aside. I snarled and struck the ground, and they lost their balance, tumbling. I heard a horse shriek in fright, heard more wailing from below. A sudden need to take flight seized me, and I lifted my massive wings. Still howling, I clawed at the sky with my talons, basking in the dark of the night and the cold wind caressing my scales. I wanted to leave, to soar among the endless clouds and drift away to someplace safer, where things did not prick at me with sharp edges. No, something told me. We are not yet done. I felt the message nudging at my thoughts, and with much regret, I submitted to its wisdom. My wings curled back, and I landed a short distance from where I rose, hissing. The small, frail body on the ground was gone. One of them had dragged it away to a place I could not see. Now the male was back, hacking at my tail with a weapon, a metal clang against the ivory of my bone. One of my heads bent swiftly, and I snatched it up by its middle. My teeth sank into it, and I exulted at the taste of its blood. But then a new pain started, a sudden blooming against my skull the instant I had bitten the human. For a few brief moments, there was something else in my head, screaming at me to stop. No! I dropped the human and thrashed, my other heads bellowing back at me, incensed by my hesitance. The male I had abandoned staggered back to its feet and snatched up its weapon again. But rather than confront me one more time, it turned on itself, stabbing its sharpness into one arm. The hurt returned, more intense than before. The pain wasn't mine. Not exactly. It felt like someone else was in pain and I had access to their thoughts. Something was wrong. The human speared itself again, this time in the leg. The pain doubled, a red haze across my vision. Listen to me! The words came from somewhere outside my mind, but I felt the message pressing into my head, demanding entry. I do not know who the voice belonged to, but every time the human harmed itself, I could feel its agony. Listen to me! They were not my words. They were not my thoughts. Something was compelling me to submit, but I did not want to. Listen to me! No! The jolt of pain that ran through me cleared my mind enough for me to understand, and I fired back at the unfamiliar presence with a scream of my own. No! I won't listen! I felt the presence rear back, the surprise and fury filtering into the beast's mind that we both occupied. With one last effort, I broke through my curtain of hurt and remembered. I do not have wings and claws and a tail. I do not have three heads that hiss and war with each other. I am not a deva. I am not a dragon. I am a girl. My name is Tia. I am not a deva. I am not a dragon. I am a girl, and I have a name. My name... One of the other heads, impatient at my resistance, moved to strike on its own, hurtling back toward the male with jaws stretched open. My name is Tia! My teeth sank into my fellow creature's neck. It screamed in terror, stunned by this betrayal as blood flowed freely from the wound. I struck again, and the second head turned to defend its brother, distracted from the humans beneath us. No! I attacked again, but this time with the force of my mind. The head reeled back, uncertain at first, and then attempted another assault. I stormed into its head, and it paused in mid-strike.
Obey!
It resisted, whipping its head back and forth like this could somehow stem the tide of my invasion. I did not stop.
Obey!
I felt a stagger back, felt the frantic attempt of the third head, still grievously wounded, to muster another counterattack, but I dodged its flimsy bites, beating it on the side of its neck using my own dragon's head as a battering ram.
Obey!
And then I felt a second awareness inside the second head, behind the creature's consciousness. A panicked struggle to wrest control of the creature away from me. Occupied in the same grotesque body, I shared its thoughts. It felt scared and agitated. It was furious and in pain. It felt human. Obey. I took advantage of its confusion and sank into the second creature's mind, cutting away all the strings that other awareness had in place, and I felt him scream as his spell crumbled. I tumbled into the second head's mind, overwhelming its desires and finally finding dominion. To look out at the world with two heads and two minds while maintaining three was disorienting at first, but it also felt like the most natural thing in the world. I looked down and saw the humans. My friends, I thought, looking fearfully back up at me. I saw Kaelin raise his hand, a ball of fire scorching at his palm. Saw Polaire stop him, shaking her head. I keened loudly, the emotion of the words I could not say spilling out into that loud sound. I explored, and felt Fox and Chief in my head again, wondering how this would feel on their end. My horse was no longer skittish. True to its pedigree, it looked up at me, trusting. Fox was also looking up at me, and his concern and worry shone through our bond. Tia? He questioned. The three-headed beast gazed down at him and sighed its affirmation. The other awareness had retreated into the third head, but I could still feel it within the creature, curled in a small ball and trying its best to remain hidden while it licked at its wounds. I punched into its thoughts, felt its fear. Its mind felt strongly of soap and marsh water, bitter and root. I formed my own thoughts into a knife, the edges supple and sharp, and plunged it through the strange consciousness. I felt it claw and scream, and then felt it dissipate. Only I remained, and the creature along with me. Feeling one less burden lifting from its mind, the beast tried to resist again. Keep still, I ordered, and it paused. Now in command of all its heads, I guided all three to the ground.
She did it!
Polaire rejoiced, laughing out loud.
Tia actually did it!
Kaelin was more wary, creeping forward with his sword drawn. Fox was quicker, approaching me, the creature, despite the wounds that should have been fatal on anyone else.
Are you there, Tia?
He laid a hand atop the middle creature's head. The Aussie, I, turned and nuzzled at his hand.
How did you know? Zoya asked him. How did you know it would feel your injuries?
I didn't,
my brother said.
I don't feel it myself, and Tia's never felt it on her end either. But I sensed that something else inside the dragon had access to her mind. When the dragon bit me, I felt it screaming in response. It could enter Tia's thoughts, but it wasn't exempted from the pain.
Provide me with a full account later. Althea might be interested in investigating this further.
She must kill it quickly,
Kaelin said,
before she loses control.
My mind rebelled at such a proposal. Without the malignant awareness to guide us,
We were compliant and docile. Almost benign. We did not want to kill the humans. We only wanted to be left alone.
He's right, Tia,
Polaire said to us.
It's the only way to ensure this does not happen again.
Tia.
Fox's hand felt warm and solid against our skin. We nudged at him one last time and stood, rising to our full height, wings expanding. Kaelin hefted his blade, but we turned away with one last despairing cry, heading into the waters of the lake. We waded deeper, not stopping until the waters closed over our heads, until the mud and the dark hid us from view of those waiting by the shore. The only disturbance along the lake after that was a sudden agitation underneath the surface. Huge bubbles rising up to the surface for an extended period of time, only to taper off and fade from view, leaving the waters as clear and as pristine as when we had first arrived. And I opened my eyes and sputtered. Fox was beside me within moments, placing my head on his lap. The Heartforger's stone around my neck was still glowing.
Are you okay, Tia? Tia!
I am here, I rasped.
It was an unsettling feeling, wanting to cough out the bilge water in your lungs when there was none there to begin with.
My leg hurts. You stink.
So do you.
Fox was laughing, and the sound warmed my heart. He scooped me up into his arms despite my protests.
Let's get you out of here.
Are you okay?
Polaire ran to us as we approached, closing the distance.
Yes. Thanks partly to this, I think.
I touched the stone.
What happened to the Ozzy?
Gone. It was still hard to talk. My throat sore.
It won't bother us anymore.
I thought we'd lost you.
It took me a second to realize that as happy as Polaire was, she had also been crying, tears staining her face and ruining her rouge.
You cannot do that to us again, girl. Do you know what it did to me, thinking that you were dead?
I'm sorry.
Sorry isn't good enough. I should have listened to Parmina. Almost, after the scare you put us through. I don't know whether to hug you or spank you.
Polaire did the former, throwing her arms around me, and I breathed in her welcoming scent of spice and lavender, trying to rid myself of the putrid memories of my ordeal. Fox gently pulled us apart and set to work bandaging my thigh, the wound I'd suffered there. Kaelin nodded at me, a shade less hostile. His fellow Death Seekers whooped and cheered, staring at me with awe. I smiled wanly back, forced myself to speak again.
Like Fog said, there was someone else in the dragon's mind. It was trying to control it.
A faceless,
Polaire surmised grimly, her arms still locked around me.
We must track him down at whatever cost. He killed the Death Seekers, tried to kill us, and very nearly killed you. He has to pay for everything he's done. And I want to be one of those holding the knife.
You don't need to,
I murmured into her ear, my voice soft enough so the others couldn't hear. My voice felt weaker, and it hurt to get any more words out. But I managed somehow.
I know who it is.
The girl laughed as the Ozzy's three heads vied against each other for the right to be petted, sampling the air with their forked tongues. It is good to see you again, she murmured. She still looked tired, but she appeared to gain strength with every second that passed. All the world would tremble to see such a sight, I knew. The dark Asha on the shore, and the seven Deva she wielded. They were enough to break the land. They were enough to break crowns. How must Hollow Knife have felt when he created such monsters? How must the followers of the blade that soars have felt to turn and see such horrors at their kingdom's borders? The girl turned. The Deva's eyes followed her movements. We leave for Denoris at dawn, she said.
30. The willows had finally succumbed to the quiet. Nothing moved, save for the clouds rolling above the Ashaka, across the evening sky. After all the celebrations and all the joy that greeted our arrival, I welcomed the solitude. Fortunately, Polaire had been insistent, demanding time for me to fully recuperate, and so the jubilation around the Valerian was muted. Mistress Parmina had been ecstatic. No doubt my price would quadruple. Rahim nearly suffocated me in his bear hugs. Licks and cheshes were less punishing. Lady Michaela's happiness was more subdued, her relief more palpable. She said nothing, only hugged me as Polaire had. Her tears came unbidden, staining her bedsheets, and I, worn and fatigued, cried along with her. The Valerian household was in disarray. Kana was sick, and Farhi had her hands full trying to get errands done when there were crowds of people packing the streets along the Ashaka. These were not normal visitors to the Willows. These were people not only from Kion, but from nearby kingdoms like Odalia and Denoris and the city-states of Yadosha, some even as far away as Istera and Dricht, all hoping to catch a glimpse of me. After 2 days, Mistress Parmina had had enough and enlisted the help of many death-seekers to clear the roads of people. The revelers were persuaded to take their reveling elsewhere, and for the first time in 3 days, the streets stood serene and empty, while in other places of Ankyo, the people celebrated. I made a full recovery after only a night's worth of sleep, though Fox was adamant about letting me rest for a week more, because of the wound on my thigh. Normally I would have lodged a protest, but this time, I agreed with him. Staying at the Valerian would give me a good opportunity to keep an eye on Farhi without attracting any suspicion. And Lady Michaela was also on hand to ensure nothing went wrong. Kalad also paid me a visit, using the opportunity to carefully extract my memories of the fight with the Ozzy.
The forger isn't in Kion, he said. After all the excitement, he thought he'd go and see for himself. New, rarer memories to harvest.
Are other people's memories all you both think about? I teased.
No. We think about Hearthglass, too.
He grinned at the look on my face.
I was joking. I have not extracted memories from my own Hearthglass for days, and my mind is clear. Which is a good time to apologize to you.
But why?
You might not remember it. But I was the boy who confronted you at the Odalian Palace 3 years ago. The one who accused Dark Asha of killing my mother. Master had just taken me on as an apprentice, but back then I was so full of anger. You were the easiest target for me.
He cleared his throat.
I almost didn't remember what I did. Until I recognized myself in one of your memories. I am sorry. I know things have not been easy, and it was unkind of me to add to your problems.
Apology accepted, Sir Kalad. I assured him, smiling, unaware then of the irony of my next words. If there is one thing I have learned from both our trades, it is that we must always be in the business of forgiveness, lest we become consumed by our anger. We had agreed to make our move on the third day after we returned, to give me ample time to rest and to prepare for the confrontation. Tonight, Mistress Parmina and Lady Shadi had left to attend some parties thrown in my honor, and the old woman intended to drag them to as many of them as they were able.
This suited my plans. The longer they stayed out of the Valerian, the better. I waited until it was close to midnight, then headed downstairs, where Polaire, Lady Michaela, and Alfie waited. We ventured into the scullery, where Kana and Farhi were hard at work cleaning dishes. There were 4 times the number of visitors calling at the Valerian than was the norm, and so both maids were constantly busy. Mistress Parmina had even dipped into her coffers and hired temporary help to handle the additional workload. The first of them would be arriving in 2 days, which meant we had little time to act. The girls looked up with surprise when we entered, and both dropped a hurried curtsy despite being up to their elbows in soapy water. Farhi, we need to talk. Lady Michaela's voice still sounded weak, but with Alfie and Polaire at her side, looking grave, it had the desired effect. Farhi visibly gulped, then struggled to dry her hands on the thin apron she wore.
You, wait in the other room,
Polaire commanded Kana. The girl gave her companion what should have been a comforting, reassuring look, but came out frightened and half relieved that she wasn't the focus of their ire. She bobbed her head again and fled the scullery.
You are in trouble, girl,
I heard Lady Michaela say to Farhi, just before I left the kitchen and moved to the room where Kana stood, looking worried. I smiled at her. Don't look so scared.
It's just that we're short of hands as it is, m'lady,
Kana said, wringing her hands in dismay. She was still warm to the touch from her brief bout of fever, but she insisted she felt better.
We still have a lot of things to do. The extra help won't come in for another day yet. Did Farhi break something? Did Mistress Parmina learn of the cants you've been giving us?
It's a little more serious than that. Lady Michaela wouldn't be up for something so trivial as a broken plate. She'll still need many more months to recover.
She shouldn't be up at all,
Kana agreed.
And Mistress Parmina has ordered the house be cleaned from top to bottom again tomorrow, because she said the Empress of Alex might pay us a visit. The Empress!
She tugged hard at her apron for emphasis.
My Nana would be thrilled. I asked the mistress if she could come along and watch. Only from the street, mind. Not even inside the Valerian. I'm sure she wouldn't mind if there was just one more person outside.
The Empress's visit is a good reason for causing more mischief, Zoya said, entering the room. She looked stunning. Her hua glittered golden, and below her waist, white cranes grazed at silver pawns. Her wrap was deceptively simple, a dark ochre color with no adornments but spun from the softest silk. I didn't think you would come, I told her. She shrugged.
Lady Michaela insisted. I have been to 4 different parties at 4 different tea rooms tonight, and I needed a break.
You also had another motive for coming here, didn't you?
I don't know what you could possibly mean, Tia.
Kana, there's some tea boiling over the fireplace. Would you be so kind as to pour a bowl for our guest? Kana swallowed nervously, then hurried to do just that. I've been learning a lot about the faceless in my history lessons, I continued.
That is a requirement for all Asha, Tia.
Some of us learn better than others. I've learned that the faceless can draw runes just as ably. Unlike us, they have certain stones at their disposal that allow them this feat. The Seeking Stone, for instance. Another stone allows them to speed up the process of raising a deva so that they do not need to wait years for their resurrection.
I took the same lessons you did, Tia. I do not need the lecture.
That's why Mistress Parmina was so insistent that all Asha who could potentially enter the Ashaka had to present themselves to the Oracle first. The seeress had told her many years ago that a faceless would try to enter her household, and so she must be vigilant.
I don't see what this has to do with me.
Mistress Parmina rejects all applicants who do not pass the Oracle's test. You were one of them, weren't you?
Zoya's heart's glass made a sudden sputter of blue before fading quickly. Passing the Oracle's test isn't a requirement to be an Asha. And so House Imperial took you in. House Imperial has a more illustrious history than House Valerian. It was the first Ashaka, founded by Vernasha of the Roses. But you've always nursed a grudge against the Valerian, haven't you? You were Lady Shadi's childhood friend. Lady Michaela saw potential in you both and brought the two of you here. Mistress Parmina accepted her, but not you. That's why you resented Lady Shadi. It felt like she had abandoned you. And it's why you tried to get me in trouble before I was even considered a novice. You were angry. Zoya took a deep breath.
I don't deny it. Yes, I've known Shadi all my life. Yes, it was Lady Michaela who brought me to the Valerian. Mistress Parmina rejected me because I lied to the Oracle. But lying to the Seeress doesn't mean I am one of the faceless. If that were the case, I'd say roughly a quarter of the Asha in the Willows are faceless.
Should I leave? Kana stuttered, pouring the tea so quickly that parts of the liquid slopped over the bowl and onto the table.
It's telling, isn't it?
You could have hidden the Seeking Stone at the Falling Leaf, counting on the fact that I was the nearest Dark Asha on hand and would succumb to its effects. You were also on hand when the Azi wreaked havoc on the Darashi Oyun. As I recall, you were angry that Lady Shadi had taken the lead role.
All other Asha were present at the Darashi Oyun.
But you were the only Asha present who volunteered to fight the Azi with us, excepting Polaire. You've never wanted to help us before. What better way to keep an eye on your Deva than to be there with us to head off any obstacles? Lady Aina? Zoya took a deep breath. When she spoke again, she sounded almost admiring.
You've thought this out thoroughly, haven't you? I'm impressed.
I had to. Anyone could easily be a suspect if you make a good enough argument for it. And you were the easiest choice.
That's true. I didn't think about it that way. What about Lady Michaela or Polaire?
Lady Michaela could have been pretending sickness. When everyone thinks you're asleep in bed, it's easier to move about without being seen. You wouldn't even need an alibi. And like you, Polaire was on the spot for the most part. She could have followed me to the Falling Leaf without anyone else knowing and planted the Seeking Stone there. Mistress Parmina could have done it for financial gain. Admittedly, I never really thought about Althea as a suspect.
That makes sense. There's something inherently trustworthy about Altesia. Ladies?
Kana stammered, confused by the sudden turn our conversation had taken. Farhi isn't in trouble, Kana. Lady Michaela and Althea are protecting her right now.
But I don't understand.
It's because she's in danger.
In danger? From the Empress?
No. From you. We are all taught to block our minds from external infiltration by those who can command the dark and use compulsion. Even such training may not be successful when facing a strong faceless, as I had learned. Farhi has no such training, and my sisters are shielding her from you. Kana looked at me and blinked.
Me? But why? I'm just a...
You're just a young girl working at the Willows. That's what you say. A group of people living near the Unkian marketplace are claiming to be your family. Your father makes a living selling pomegranates at the market. But he doesn't seem to rely on any of the wholesale suppliers in Ankyo for this.
We're originally from Southeast Kihon. My father cuts out the middlemen and makes the trips himself. A friend of my father's owns a small farm at Amarai and charges him a smaller fee.
And what is the name of your father's friend?
Kel.
There is no farmer named Kel in Amarai,
Zoya interrupted.
That's not possible. I've been to their farm.
The Lady Asha is right,
Kaelin said, stepping into the room, followed by Fox.
Several of my fellow Deathseekers made some inquiries, and I can vouch for their credibility. There is, however, a merchant named Jevin, who frequents the Cogswheel Inn at Amari, who supplies the person you call your father with his pomegranates. That merchant has been arrested by the Deathseekers after confessing to be a spy for Ena, operating secretly in Keon.
Kana stopped, holding herself still.
But that's impossible. I don't know much about Father's business, and I might have misheard where he gets his pomegranates. But if that merchant was a faceless, then my father would never have chosen to conduct any business with him had he known about...
You claim to be originally from Belaryu, in southeast Keon, I put in. Nobody there has heard of you or your family either. None of you thought you would be suspected, or that our investigations would be so thorough, did you?
You must be mistaken. We have strong roots in Belaryu. My Nana's mother's family lived there for generations. She took my grandfather's name when she married. She was a Hesht before that. My grandfather was an outsider. He came from the north.
Except that you told me months ago that your grandfather's family had lived in Belaryu for generations. Not your Nana.
You must have misunderstood me. My Nana was a...
And then her thoughts bored into mine, so quickly and so effortlessly that I would have caved if I hadn't been expecting it. If I couldn't feel Polaire from the other room adding to my strength, helping me put up a shield in my mind to prevent her from tunneling her way in. Kana snarled. All the light went out of her heart's glass. In one instant, it changed from bright red to an impenetrable black. Her face twisted into a mosaic of rage, and she tried again, only to encounter an impervious barrier of our will. Zoya took advantage of her inattention. A quick rope of wind held her in place, wrapping around her body. Frustrated, Kana lashed out again with her mind, but this time, it was directed toward Fox. I felt her in his head as easily as I could feel his, and then his presence was gone from mine. Fox turned, his face wooden. His blade made a metallic, ringing noise as he slid it out from his scabbard.
"Bricky, little girl, you are,"
the girl said. She spoke in a different accent, much like those of the Yadoshan merchants I had met.
"Give me one reason why I should not simply use compulsion on you all."
"You are not a match for this many, Asha," Alfie countered. "Surrender immediately."
"I am a match for a dozen of you all at once. In the meantime, I'm thinking I'll kill this one instead."
It was easy enough to underestimate Ena and her guise as a sweet-faced maid working in an Ashaka. The girl standing before us now looked nothing like Kana. Her eyes glittered, her mouth twisted into a cruel smile.
"That's not much of a threat," Polaire said, "as he's already dead."
Ena laughed.
"There is more than one way to die, you fools. Even the dead can feel pain, and I will have him wriggling like live meat on a butcher's hook for all eternity if you do not grant me safe passage outside of Keon. If not, he will suffer. I will make sure of it."
"It was you who shadowed me all throughout Onkyo," I said, struggling to find my link back to Fox. I could see my brother surrounded by a fog of inky blackness, but every time I drew in the rune and directed it toward the mist, I could not break through the dark barrier. "You were the Drifta woman. You pretended to be the girl who brought me to the Falling Leaf that night. You sent the skeleton after me. When you lost control of the Azi, I saw into your mind. I know how you were able to compel me."
"Perhaps you can enlighten me."
"The girl from the Falling Leaf told me Lady Shadi would be mad as hops if I were late. That's not a Keon term. It's a Yadoshan one. You told me you were all poked up. Another Yadoshan term. A guest from Yadosha used another word you used often. Can't. I thought you were joking,
that the food we smuggled to you was something you can't have. But in Yadosha, it means free food. Yet you claimed to be from southeastern Kion. Why would you use Yadoshan patter? It was only after I encountered your mind within the Ozzy and realized why it felt so familiar that I put two and two together.
Betrayed by the land of my birth, as always. I thought my disguise was perfect.
How did you learn to be in two places at once? Alfie asked. In the spirit of scientific curiosity.
I do not require physical form to find you, little girl. I know more about the dark than your pathetic little Asha friends here. I can do things they can only dream of.
Including controlling a Deva? Alfie questioned.
A simple trick. One that I suspect your charge knows all too well.
Ana smiled at me.
It appears that we are at an impasse, my dears. The question remains, how much do you value this Odalian corpse? It would be very easy for me to sever your connection, Tia, and watch him turn to dust before you.
I can teach you more, Tia, her thoughts whispered. So much more than what they can offer you.
I don't believe you.
I can teach you spells beyond imagining. We were meant to rule, young one. It is they who deny us our right because they fear our power. I have seen your true heart. We are alike, you and I. I can teach you to heal your brother, to make him truly alive, not this walking corpse.
I hesitated. You're lying.
I swear right now, on my blessed mother's grave, that I do not lie.
I will never join you.
Even after they bleed you dry the way they did your mentor. How long will they let you last in the world of the willows? Better to die with our will in our blood than their fists around our hearts, child.
Take one more step,
Ana warned when Alfie tensed.
And I will kill him where he...
With a loud whinny, Chief broke through the wall right beside Ana. She turned her head, and for a second, I saw an opening through the fog surrounding Fox. It was enough. I drove my will through it, pushed Ana's presence out of his mind. My brother slumped down.
Kaelin was the first to react. His sword came whizzing through the air, but the Faceless reached out and plucked it out of his hands like she was picking flowers along a meadow. Without missing a beat, the Deathseeker sent a ball of fire toward Ana's direction, but she repelled it easily, her hand reaching out to absorb the flames. Polaire and Alfie attacked as one. I could see the runes blaze before them, fire and wind streaking toward Ana, combining to form lightning. The Faceless whirled back and stopped both attacks in midair as well. It sizzled a few inches before her outstretched hand. Smoking.
Too slow, she sneered. Your paltry runic is nothing compared to what I...
Stay out of my head.
Fox growled at her feet, rising with his sword in hand. Ana turned to deflect the blow, the blade skittering across the floor. And I attacked. With Alfie, Polaire, and Zoya adding their strength to mine. I used everything I had gleaned from Ana's mind about compulsion and lashed out.
While she had sought to corrupt my mind little by little in subtle, underhanded ways for years, I needed no such pretense. I poured into her head, using her own tricks against her. She fought off my invasion, but never saw Fox coming until his fist slammed into her face, knocking her out.
The maid,
Zoya said with some disgust, staring down at her prone form.
How did we not think it would be the maid?
We're far too removed from the time we ourselves worked at our own Ashakaa servants, Alfie said. She was clever. We've assumed often enough that Faceless would choose positions of power and overlooked the people working for us.
She bent down and plucked the fake ruby pin from the faceless's hair. As she did, I stumbled back from the strong sense of magic emanating from her.
Not quite so foe, it seems. It helps to hide her magic from others rather than amplify it. It's nothing like I've ever seen before.
But why not simply poison the food at the Valerian?
Caelan asked.
The girl is strong in the dark, but too many zivars and spells are woven around the Ashika, limiting her abilities.
Lady Michaela said wearily, stepping into the room.
And should someone fall ill or die at the Valerian, she would be easily suspected. She bided her time, and waited instead, until she could do the most damage. As evidenced when she placed the Seeking Stone at the Falling Leaf, and when she summoned the Azi to disrupt the Darashi Oyun.
I stooped down to the fallen faceless. I reached out to her with my mind, assessing, exploring, twisting.
I wanted to tell you all about her so many times before, but she always compelled me to remain silent, I said, keeping my voice steady. I believed that they were my own thoughts. I know otherwise now.
I've never told anyone else about it, Zoya said to me, that I first came to the Valerian but was rejected.
Lady Michaela knew, I admitted, straightening up. But she never told me. I guessed and confronted her about it. Your dislike didn't just stop with me. You disliked Mistress Parmina, the maids here, everyone in the Valerian except Lady Michaela. It was like you associated a lot of bad memories with the place itself. And you were always so in control of your emotions, yet every time you looked at Shadi, your heart's glass always betrayed you. I convinced Lady Michaela that I already knew enough and that I may as well know everything else.
Was the horse your idea?
Caelan asked me. Othi did something similar in the past, but with a cow. Chief simply shook off the blow and wandered out from the stallion-sized hole it had caused in the wall. Though I imagine Mistress Parmina will charge me for the repairs.
I think I understand your meteoric rise through the Asha ranks,
Zoya confessed with a wan smile. She lowered her voice for my ears alone.
And since you know everything, must I implore you not to tell Shadi about my other secret?
I met her even gaze and grinned.
What other secret?
Zoya laughed.
I chose the Sea of Skulls for my exile, because the bones scattered here serve my purpose, she said. Because the last person that matters to me lies here. I buried him myself, with my hands and my tears. I raise all these Deva because I intend to have my vengeance for his sake and for the sake of other friends who have fallen. Both Asha and the Faceless will pay for taking everything from me, my friends, my love, my identity. The Willows will not protect them. No fortress or stronghold that shields them will be spared wherever they may be. This is my new family. This is my new identity. I will be the bone witch the kingdom fears, and I will make them pay. She knelt before the grave one last time. She pressed her lips against the stone, and then rose. The Deva flanked her, sensing their mistress's intentions. They were no longer affectionate and playful, now baying and primed for war. Her fingers traveled along the breeze, mapping out a new rune in its wake. The ground underneath the headstone shuddered, split open. A figure rose from the hole that yawned before us, fingers digging into the dirt. He was tall and garbed in military black. It was obvious from the deep wounds on his chest that he had died fighting. The girl took something out of her waist wrap. It was the small jeweled case I had seen before on her table, surrounded by the bezoars. Inside lay a silver heart's glass, shining bright as the sun.
Welcome back, my love.
Your brother? I whispered, staring at the boy.
My brother and I are no longer on speaking terms. He chose to stay behind and defend the willows.
But what of the bond you share?
An unexpected effect of my black heart's glass is that he can no longer sense me, and the reverse holds true. But for as long as I live, so will he.
She smiled.
He might even seek to kill me, though it will cost him his own life. We have come a long way only to fall apart. But if he cannot stand with us, then he must stand against us.
The man in black approached us, cloak fluttering in the wind.
He took her hand. You can join us if you choose to, Bard. The story is far from over, and we still have many kingdoms to take.
She smiled at the boy she had just raised from the grave.
Don't we, my love?
31.
They told me I would find you here.
My breath caught in my throat. I turned away from the imposing domed roof of the Oracle's temple to regard the man standing in the moonlight, regarding me with his solemn face and smiling eyes. He was dressed in dark clothes, an unusual choice for him. I put my hand over my heart's glass, instinctively seeking to shield him from reading the staccato beats his unexpected presence caused. I was thrilled, but I also knew this was not the place I wanted him to see me at. Your Highness, I stammered.
I told you before that Kanz is a good enough name for me.
He looked to the building.
I've always been curious of what went on inside that temple. Everyone's been rather mysterious about it. I keep expecting some untold treasures tucked away inside, privy only to Asha eyes.
Lord Kanz, what are you doing here?
Looking for you, actually. I don't think I've seen you since you left to fight the Ozzy. And since our first meeting, you've been raised to Asha. Put down one of the most powerful Deva I've seen in my lifetime. And been instrumental in capturing one of the three faceless leaders.
He grinned at my surprise.
The faceless may be a carefully guarded secret, but Kaelin trusts me. Not even my father knows of the faceless's capture, though he shall know soon enough. I promised I wouldn't tell another soul of this.
I don't understand. Why are you looking for me?
To thank you for saving my kingdom. The Ozzy could have done more damage if left unchecked. More lives lost. And also to apologize. I thought about visiting you sooner, but Kaelin convinced me to let you recuperate first.
I made a note to strangle Kaelin as soon as I saw him again.
I had asked both Lady Alticia and Lady Zoya to keep me abreast of what's been happening with you. They were more than happy to tell me of your remarkable progress. So I decided there was no reason for me not to come and thank you myself.
He enveloped my hand in his, warm in the otherwise evening chill.
From the bottom of my heart, you have my thanks, Lady Tia. If there is anything within my power to offer you, on behalf of my father and of Odalia, do not hesitate to let me know.
A dinner. The words tumbled out before I thought them through.
A dinner?
The prince looked perplexed. It was too late to take back my words. Just dinner. To ask you to dinner for once. Or even a walk would suffice. But not if you're not permitted to. I didn't mean that. I meant not if you have to bring a squadron of bodyguards for protection. I was babbling. Were princes allowed to walk out with new Asha? Did saving his kingdom entitle me to ask him to dinner? Etiquette books were mum on the subject.
Dinner sounds nice.
He was smiling.
It would be my honor. We could do that now if you like.
I can't. Not tonight.
My gaze drifted back to the temple. He saw. Understood.